This episode of the Kona Edge is brought to you by the IM Summit. Become the best triathlete you can be by learning from the best. The IM Summit includes sessions from Lucy Gossage, Tyler Butterfield, and functional sports nutritionist Ian Craig, amongst others. Discover more at theimsummit.com and use the discount code KONA at checkout to get 30% off. That's theimsummit.com.
This is the Kona Edge, the home of Ironman triathletes who dream of qualifying for the World Championships on the Big Island.
Welcome on to yet another edition of the Kona Edge. I'm Brad Brown, and I get to share another fantastic story with you today. I love just chatting to age groupers from around the world, and I honestly do have one of the best jobs in the world, and lucky that I get to do this, and I'm glad that you're enjoying it too. So we've been getting some fabulous feedback about the podcast. Don't forget, you stand the chance to win an Ironman entry. All you need to do is leave us a review and a rating on iTunes, and head over to this URL. It's thekonaedge.com/win. You can get all the details there, but leave us a review and I could be paying for your next Ironman entry. So go check it out, thekonaedge.com/win. All the details are there. Don't forget, too, if you'd like to be in touch, you can drop me an email, brad@thekonaedge.com. If there's something you'd like to chat about or if you need help with anything, pop me a mail. I'd love to hear from you. Let's get into today's podcast, though, and I loved this chat, and I think you might enjoy it just as much. We chat to Scott Cooper today on the Kona Edge. Scott, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much, Brad. I'm excited to be here.
I'm super stoked to have you on, Scott, just to chat a little bit about your sort of history in the sport and what you're up to and some of the incredible results that you've had. But let's just find out a little bit more about you. And I know you're a student at the moment. You're still at school. You're actually at your folks' house at the moment, just outside Ontario, or in Ontario, just outside Toronto. But you're studying in Montreal. Tell us a little bit about what you do from a studying perspective.
So right now I'm working on my PhD at McGill University and studying chemical engineering and doing research into cardiovascular health and in the field of biomedical engineering.
That to me is phenomenal. I know what it takes to do a PhD. Not that I've got one, but I've got friends who've done PhDs, and just the workload from that point of view is incredible. How do you balance that and training for not just triathlons but Ironman?
It definitely takes a lot of planning, a lot of life planning. There's not a lot of free hours in the day, but the nice thing about it is with the PhD, it's very research-based and experiment-based. So I have a bit of freedom in my time to be able to plan experiments when sort of it works best, and can sneak in training in between experiments and that sort of thing. So I can make it work. But like I said, it's definitely a juggling act of trying to fit it all in.
I'm sure. Let's take a step back, though, and chat a little bit about you growing up and how active you were. Were you pretty sporty as a kid?
Yeah. Growing up, like especially through high school, very much into sports. I was kind of a jack of all trades athlete, you could say. I was on everything from my school golf team to track team, curling, rugby, football. I really just did it all. And for the most part, though, one of the reasons I excelled at the sports that I did was because I could run fairly well. And then that's sort of my biggest background is in running.
So how did you end up finding your way to triathlon, especially because you'd done all those other sports? I mean, it's you obviously love sport and you're pretty active, but to do three in one, I mean, where did that come about?
Well, I think the seed was first planted in 2000 with the Sydney Olympics, and Simon Whitfield won the gold medal there. And I remember watching that and being really excited about the sport and thinking triathlon's a very, very cool sport. And then just, yeah, over the years, like that was always kind of in the back of my mind. And then by the time I got to the end of high school, I was doing kind of dabbling a little bit in swimming and biking, and it just sort of, it kept piquing my interest. And then I actually got set up through my uncle started doing a charity triathlon somewhere just outside Toronto in the Muskoka region, and he kind of changed his whole life around, got in shape, and then did this triathlon, and then was like, hey, you should do it as well. And then the following year, after the first year he did it, I decided to give it a shot. And so that was the first triathlon that I did, was a sprint triathlon at this charity at Joe's team. And then I caught the bug, and I haven't looked back since.
I was actually just thinking that. I was like, once the bug's bitten, is the rest history. And it is a bit of a bug, isn't it, Scott? Like, once it's in your blood, it's quite difficult to get it out.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And I remember the first race that I did, like, it was, obviously tons of things went wrong, and like I couldn't put my shirt on because I was soaking wet, and I had my bib pinned to it, like it was a disaster. But I just loved the whole experience. I loved the vibe of it, and I remember thinking way back then, there were some people at the race that had done an Ironman before, and I thought, oh, that's insane. Like, there's no way. I'm enjoying triathlon, but there's no way that I would ever do an Ironman. And that obviously changed over the years, because that's essentially all I do now.
Yeah, I love those stories of people's first triathlon. I mean, I've heard some incredible ones. I've done it, and there's actually photographic proof where I have my helmet on backwards. That's how I get. Yeah, so I'm going to just put it out there as well. If you're listening to the podcast, we want to see those first triathlon photos. You can tweet them to us. I'd love to see what you've done. But it's amazing to think how far you've come. I mean, we're all in that sort of boat. But for someone like you particularly, who I mean, you talk about getting the shirt on and it's wet and the bibs pinned to it. But you learn along the way. And that's probably one of the beauties of the sport, is no one comes in knowing everything. And even once you've been doing it a while, it's always a learning curve, and there's always something new to learn.
Yeah, no, it's an adventure in that sense as well. And even now, like, I find that I learn stuff every race. And again, like, I think the triathlon community is it's such a welcoming community that I found that also at the first race, I was literally the only person not wearing a wetsuit. And then just looking around, I was just in my little Speedo swimsuit and thinking, okay, something's wrong here. But then people will give you that information, and they can help you learn. And if you rely on that community, you can really get ahead quickly. But there's always a new lesson to learn in every race.
It's quite an intimidating, you talk about a welcoming, but the first sort of couple of experiences, it is quite intimidating because of just the amount of gear you need, and there's always one or two racing snakes really strutting their stuff around. But as you say, they are quite welcoming. What advice would you give to a newbie thinking about getting in the sport, who looks at this and goes, gee, I don't know if that's for me?
I think the most important thing is just to go out and have fun. Like, I see a lot of people that are getting into the sport now, and sometimes they take it very seriously right from the first race they're doing. And the advice I always give them is just have fun, because if you just have fun and enjoy the day, like, and when all these silly things go wrong, you can laugh about it afterwards, and you'll come out really enjoying the sport. Cause I think that it's about kind of nurturing that love of the sport, as opposed to really trying to force yourself to perform. So really just focusing on enjoying the day and enjoying the experience, and not getting too caught up in it.
That first one that you did, how did you go? I mean, were you middle of the pack? Did you have some ability? I mean, the other sports that you played, were you fairly good at what you did? Everything you touched sort of turned to gold, or was that not necessarily the case?
I would say not necessarily the case. Like, especially the swimming, even now, that's the of the three disciplines, the one that I struggle the most with. But back then, like, I had a really good run in that first race, and I was decently strong on the bike, but definitely had lots of room to grow. And on the swim, yeah, I would say sort of mid-packish, mid to the back of the pack. And I think, in that first race, I maybe finished in the top half or top third of all the competitors. But so it was nothing spectacular from my first race, but I felt like I got through the day feeling pretty strong.
As far as then taking it to the next step, and not necessarily to go to an Ironman, but you've then signed up for your next race. When do you start taking this thing seriously and putting some real thought into what you're doing and being really deliberate about it?
Well, I would say so that first season that I raced, I did a couple sprints, including that first one that I did, and then ended the season with an Olympic distance in Montreal. And when I did that race, at the race, there was a booth set up with the McGill Triathlon Club. And then so that's just a club that's run out of the university in Montreal. And anyway, so I kind of got chatting to them and then at that point joined that club. And then that's when I started to get into actual structured training, where it was before that I would just run, bike, and swim a whole bunch and then wait and see what would happen. And then joining the triathlon club, it was structured workouts, intervals, all that sort of stuff. And that kind of got the seed again planted. And then that following season, I started getting focusing more on Olympic distance and did a half Ironman that year. And then that's when I started to see that I had some aptitude for the sport. And that's when I really started to take it a bit more serious and started looking into more coaching and getting into the gear and all that sort of stuff.
You talk about the more structured stuff. Did you respond from a performer's perspective pretty quickly to that? Did you realize, hang on a sec, if I do structure things and like you say, you follow and do intervals and that sort of thing, that you were getting quite big improvements early on?
Yeah, certainly. That was a huge booster. Like I said, that first race I finished, I was maybe in the top half or top third, and then by the following season, I was competing at the level of the top of my age group in any race. So I found a huge improvement once I had that more structured training. I think that it's just it makes your training that much more efficient, and you can get that much more out of it. And especially being at the time I was a student, so like I didn't have all the time in the world, and I think this would apply to anyone out there that's working a full-time job. You really got to maximize any time you have training, and just going out and logging miles isn't the best way to go about it. I think really taking a more planned approach makes a huge difference in performance.
Yeah, could not agree more, Scott. You said that at that first one, you thought, there's no ways I'll ever do an Ironman. When did the thought of doing a full start sort of bouncing around your head?
I'm not sure. Probably, I think within maybe a year and a half of that first one. At that point, like, because I was getting more into triathlon, and to be honest, one of the things that got me thinking about it more and more was watching just random YouTube videos of like triathlon motivation and that sort of thing before races, and then more and more of them included Ironman stuff, and then it kind of piqued my interest at that long distance racing and what the challenge would really be like trying to tackle something that long. And then from there, I just sort of worked my way up, and then what happened was in Mont-Tremblant, which is about an hour and a half north of Montreal, right when I was starting to think about doing an Ironman and that long distance race, the Mont-Tremblant Ironman got released and opened to the public, and so then I just immediately signed up for the following year, and then it just became this whole focus was that longer distance triathlon.
That first, when you sign up for your first Ironman, it's all exciting until you hit the sort of pay button, once your credit card details in there, and then reality sinks in. It's you're almost going from this extreme joy to this unbelievable terror. Was it exactly the same for you?
100%. I clicked the button and I did it at I was working in the lab with my lab mates, and I clicked the button and I was so excited, then kind of turned to them and was thinking, like, what did I just sign up for? Like, I'm not prepared for this at all. I'm just going to go out there and make a fool of myself. But anyways, that did pass pretty quickly. There was the immediate shock, but then I kind of talked myself off the ledge and then just took it day by day, and it's always daunting, especially going into your first Ironman, but because those distances are so long. But I just really focused on taking it day by day, and each day tried to get a little bit stronger and be a little bit more fitter and move towards being able to complete the race. Just step by step, you get there.
I love the fact, and I say to a lot of people that they're training for an Ironman and doing an Ironman, particularly your first one, it's a process, and you've got to follow the steps to get to where you're going. And I love the fact that for you, your career was exactly that. So often people decide they want to get into the sport because they want to do an Ironman. So they don't go and they don't do the progression of doing a sprint to Olympic to a half and then on to full. But you did. Do you think that is the better way to go?
I certainly do. I think it is just... for several reasons. First of all, like I was mentioning before, I think that it's important to sort of organically build a love for the sport. And I think that if you start with those smaller, more manageable races, or the shorter, more manageable races, it really lets you just enjoy them. Because I found, anyways, there was a lot less stress, because in my mind, I could get through a sprint triathlon. That wasn't too much to bite off, whereas an Ironman's obviously a huge thing. So it gave me a lot of positive reinforcement as I went along. And at the same time, it just takes months and years of experience to be able to work out these little problems, as far as, like, yeah, trying to get your shirt on and transition, that sort of thing. Just get rid of those stresses and really know what you're doing and what you're getting into. And I think that helps take away some of that nerves on race day when you're doing that first Ironman. And again, yeah, you can just enjoy it a lot more.
Scott, in the build-up to your first Ironman, and I think this is the same for everyone, you spend hours and hours on the road and in the water, and it plays through your mind many, many times what you think is going to sort of play out on race day. Your first experience, was it what you expected? Was it easier than you expected? Was it harder? Did it live up to expectations? What were your experiences with it?
I think that ultimately it was pretty close to what I expected. Soon after I signed up for the Ironman, I started working with my coach that I still work with now, Paulo Saldana, and he was an ex Ironman pro triathlete about 20, 30 years ago. And anyway, so he did a really good job of imparting sort of all of his knowledge. And through some of the training that he got me to do, he got me into the right mindset, I think, beforehand, which really helped. So I went into it having done really long brick workouts and race simulations and all that sort of stuff. So I really knew what to expect out of my body and how it would feel. So overall, I think that very much it played out like I thought it would. However, I would do have to say that the last 10K of the marathon, I don't think that there's anything that you can do to prepare yourself for how that feels. But I got through it and felt strong at the end, and then that was the important thing.
Absolutely. And going into that first one, you mentioned that in the build-up to that Ironman, you started to sort of feature within age groups of or other races. Did you go into that first one with any sort of ambitions? Did you think, you know what, I just want to go and finish this? Or were you harboring ambitions to possibly get a top 10, top 5? What was happening?
Well, like, to be honest, I went in hoping to qualify for Kona. That was the goal. Once I sort of locked on to doing Ironman, then the goal was to get to Hawaii and race there. So going in, that's what sort of my top goal was. Realistically, though, even now, like when I'm racing, one of the things that I always try and focus on is more of that process-driven racing, in the sense that when I went into that first Ironman, the same way I'll go into Kona 4 or 5 weeks from now, I go in with my plan and I know what I'm capable of, and then it's more about the personal improvement race to race and trying to achieve the my own personal goals. And then obviously the hopes that that's going to stack up to a really good result. But I think that, with that approach, I went in just hoping to have a strong race and do well. And then if everything went to plan, then hopefully that would be a Kona spot for me.
Talk to me about the thinking of, you talk about a process-driven approach. Obviously, you come from an engineering background, so that is the way you're wired. Talk to me a little bit about your approach, that process. What is it?
Well, essentially what it is just the idea that when you get to the race on race day, sure, you're tapered, so you're going to have a little extra pep in your step, but at the end of the day, you're not going to become superhuman on race day. You know, like everything that you've done in training, you're training your body to be efficient at whatever pace or power prescription you're able to maintain for the Ironman distance. So I really trying to go into a race and just try and get the most out of myself to make sure that I can follow my proper pacing and nutrition and look at all those little things and throughout the day, and then try and stay not distracted by what's going on around me, like not getting really upset by something uncontrollable that happens, like say your goggles come off or something like that. You just put them back on, and you just got to keep giving your best effort and what you can do. And the same thing is, and I think this is an important thing, especially on the bike, is sometimes you'll have people just blast past you in the first 5-10 kilometers of a bike, and it's really tempting to say I should go with these guys, but typically what you'll see is that 130, 140K down the road that they're going at 20 kilometers an hour because they've completely burnt their legs. So really focusing on that process and knowing like, this is what I'm capable of. This is on the bike, for example, this is the power that I can do, and having confidence in that to be able to give you the result that you want, and really focusing more on that than on the externals, such as the other racers around you and what they're doing.
I love that approach, that if you've done the work and you back the systems you've had in place, and if it's good enough on race day, then it's good enough on race day, which I think is yeah. Awesome. That first one, how did you go? I mean, going in there with, you know, you've done the work, you hoping for a Kona slot, how did it go? Did you end up qualifying first time out?
I did not. I just missed it. So my first Ironman, it was 9:42 or 9:43, I think, was my time. And then there was two qualifying spots in my age group, and the second guy was a minute or a minute and a half ahead of me, so it was pretty close. But I was catching up to him on the run, and just ran out of room. But as I said, I was just really hoping to have a great race, and I was really happy with my time, and then just got beat by two better guys on the day. And then at the end of the day, that just gave me tons more motivation to go back to the race next year and try and get that spot.
I was going to say, how soon afterwards did you decide you want to go back? But by the sounds of it, it was almost immediate.
Yeah, 9 a.m. the next morning, I was lined up to register for the next year.
Sucker for punishment much. That's amazing. And eventually getting to Kona, I mean, that's for a lot of age groupers is the ultimate goal. Why was Kona such a big driving force for you?
I think a couple reasons. One for sure is the challenge of Kona. Whenever you hear about Kona and when I started doing more research in Ironman, all you hear is just how hot and how windy and how tough the course is. So I think for one, it was just that I really wanted to challenge myself and what should be one of the toughest arenas out there. So that was a driving force. And then the second was just to have that experience to race against the best in the world. It's unique in our sport that we have such a solid race like that, where we can have even amateurs taking the best of all the amateurs and putting them in one spot. And you really get to stack up against how the rest of the world is. And it's amazing to be able to race on the same course as all the pros at the same time. And just that whole atmosphere and the idea of going to Kona was just, it was overwhelming for me. And I just wanted to be part of that.
Let's talk about your first experience on the Big Island. I love that exactly what you're saying, that it's an opportunity for, I don't want to say ordinary everyday people, because you still need to be pretty good and extraordinary to be able to qualify and race on the Big Island. But being able to be out on the course and particularly where you are, the sort of times that you do, you're not that far behind the leaders. You get to see them at turnaround points and that sort of thing. It must be almost, I mean, I don't want to say you get starstruck, but it must be an amazing feeling to see, like you say, the best athletes in the world that you've seen on all these YouTube videos winning races. All of a sudden you're racing against them.
Yeah, no, it is really cool. It's really cool to be right there. And again, I think that's something that's very unique to our sport. And it's something that makes it that much more fun when you're, like you said, when you go to a turnaround and then Ian Ferdino's running by you, it's pretty amazing to see. And I think that it helps motivate you out there on race day. And because you want to see how you stack up against the best of the world. And at the same time, it's just cool. It's just a cool experience to be able to be out there with these guys and girls.
You mentioned the conditions in Kona and how brutal they are. There aren't too many places on earth where you do experience those sort of conditions. How do you prepare yourself coming from where you come from? I mean, the Canadian summers do get fairly warm, but the winters are pretty brutal. I mean, it's almost the complete opposite to what you would experience in Kona.
Yeah, no, for sure. And what I do, like, because especially this time of the year, we have a heat wave going on in southern Ontario right now. So it pretty much feels like Kona heat, but that's going to be over pretty quickly and we'll be into some cold temperatures. But these days, what I do is I just try and get to Hawaii ahead of time. So I get there about 10 days before, which usually gives me enough time to acclimatize to the heat. But the first year I went to Kona, I couldn't take that much time off, so I only got there about 5 days before the race. And then so what I did is beforehand I would do treadmill sessions and just put on all my winter clothes. I'd be wearing a toque and I wouldn't have a fan on, and just try and make myself as hot as possible when I was doing tempo runs on the treadmill, and then same thing with inside on a bike on a trainer, and just tried to make myself as hot as possible, just to get used to that feeling of that heat that you can't even get off you. It just feels like it really sticks to you.
What was the thing that surprised you most about Kona?
The thing that surprised me most, I don't know. I don't know if there was anything that was really, really shocking or surprising, but the thing that hit me the most was just the atmosphere there, and I think trying to not cope with it, but trying to soak everything in was a lot. It was a bit overwhelming that first time there. That again, you get to see all these pro triathletes all over the place, and everyone in the world looks like the fittest person you've ever seen, and you just think, I don't belong here. I don't belong with these people. Like I'm just gonna get destroyed out there. But then when you get to race day, it all stacks up just to the training you've done and how well you've prepared for it.
Do you approach race day at Kona differently to what you would another Ironman, or is the approach exactly the same? I mean, your first one, you said you went in there trying to get a Kona slot, and that was the goal. Do you go to Kona to chase podiums, or is it a case again? You go as hard as you can, and if that's good enough on the day, then that's good enough.
Yeah, well, like for sure, when I'm going through those really tough sessions, especially in the last few weeks and couple months before the race, I'm envisioning getting those podium spots. But really, when it comes down to race day, when just like any other race, I do what I'm capable of. I go out and I run my own race, and really, how I try and look at it is you save the like, quote unquote race for the end of the marathon. That's where you can really make that extra push and try and run outside yourself to try and move up that podium or whatever the goal may be. But overall, I take that same process driven approach of just I know what I can do, and especially on a course like Kona where it's so hot and so demanding. If on the bike you really try and hammer to make up extra time, like you're just gonna pay for it on the marathon. There's no getting around that. So I really just try and stick to my own game plan as best I can, and focus on nutrition and hydration and make sure that I'm set up so that if I'm in that position late on in the race and late on in the marathon, when I can try and move up a couple spots, then I'll have an opportunity to do so.
What are you most proud of what you've achieved so far?
I think for sure my most proud achievement was Kona last year, because I finished on the podium in fourth place last year. And then that was also coming off early in the season. I had a really bad bike accident, and I broke my shoulder, collarbone, shoulder blade. I had about 15 fractures in my shoulder, and in March was being told that I may never be able to swim again. So getting to October into Kona and finishing on the podium, it was a really long and painful road through that summer. It was a really tough 6 months, but I was really proud of, first of all, finishing the race, and then also having a nice result there that I could look back on and really be proud of.
What was the biggest lesson that you learned in that comeback from injury?
The biggest lesson, I would say that it was more that it just reinforced what I'd been doing. The take it day by day, take it step by step. There was like obviously in a comeback like that, there's tons of setbacks when like you can't even lift your arm off your leg to trying to think about how am I going to swim 4 kilometers. But yeah, I just took it day by day. I broke it down, and every day I would just try and get a little bit farther across the pool, or I'd had to slowly get back into running again, and just taking it step by step, and really just, you know, you can't get overwhelmed by looking at the big picture sometimes. Sometimes you just gotta to stay on a pretty narrow mind frame and try and get yourself to that ultimate goal.
Compared to the build up to Kona 2015, how's the preparation gone for this one?
Well, first of all, I didn't break my shoulder this year, so that puts me miles ahead. But overall, my preparation's been really good. Actually, I've put in some really solid work this year, and just with years of practice and refining my the way that I respond to training, I think that I'm starting to get towards a formula that works for me. So. I think that I can really build on certain, you know, workouts and workout styles that really work well with me, and my body adapts too quickly. So I've really been able to focus on those and put in good training in those, which I think will really pay off when I get to Hawaii.
What have you done anything differently? Not even majorly differently, but anything differently between this year and last year?
In the last 2 years, not a whole lot. The biggest change in my training is I've done a lot more swimming in the last 12 months than I did the year before. I really tried to work on that part of my racing. But other than that, it's I find that like you're not going to become I said this earlier, I think, but you're not going to become superhuman overnight. You know, like you're not going to be able to do infinitely harder workouts and that sort of thing. It's always just you got to do incrementally more and just slowly build up mileage and intensity in workouts and that sort of thing. So I think, my body can withstand a little bit more punishment than it could last year. So I can just train a little bit harder and maybe get in an extra one of those really hard workouts in a week, just because I can bounce back that little bit faster. And I think that's been the biggest change from last year's training.
I think you touched on a very important point there too, and that's something that I think a lot of people don't realize, that is the consistency of training doesn't necessarily just make you stronger, but it, like you say, it helps you bounce back after hard sessions better, that you become more resilient. And obviously that comes up to a point where you hit a certain age when you then start maybe not bouncing back as quickly as the aging process kicks in. But you're still fairly young. You still got a good few years ahead of you where if you keep building on this, you can get a lot faster, can't you?
No, that's what I'm hoping, and I think like right now I'm 28, so I think I still have some good years left to me, and yeah, like you said, that it's the consistency that's the important thing. That when you ask about like what training changes, it's just really making sure that you're getting those workouts in, and on those days when you're tired, that you still go out and you still do the miles, and I think that if you can keep consistent and you can keep pushing, then that's when you can really start to see some good improvement in your racing.
You mentioned at the start of this chat that you had to juggle, obviously, with training and what you need to do school-wise and your PhD and work and all that sort of thing. Tips for someone who's really struggling with that side of the sport? I mean, I think a lot of triathletes, particularly Ironman triathletes, do battle with the time management side of things. Have you got any strategies in that really help you sort of streamline and make your life a little bit easier so you can fit all of these things in?
The biggest thing is I just find that I make sure that I plan out my week at the beginning of the week. And for sure, having a set training program really makes a difference. I know that there's people that kind of, they'll say, okay, I'll fit in a ride or a run when I can. But like realistically, that's not going to work out. So what I like to do is to make sure that I have my whole week's planned, both with my experiments on my PhD as well as my training, and then I kind of have all my time allotted for that. And sure, things come up in the week that you can't predict, and you're going to have to adapt. But I find having going into the start of each week with a set schedule, set plan, that's the way to go about it. The kind of taking the loose approach of, yeah, no, like maybe if I fit in a run, I'll be able to get in this workout. I find that doesn't work. That's not a successful way to go about it.
A lot of people getting into the sport, Ironman is becoming extremely popular. Advice for a newbie, for instance, if you could go back and tell yourself when you were starting out, knowing what you know now, what would you tell yourself?
What would I tell myself? I think that I'd tell myself to, you know, like don't get ahead of yourself. Like I said, I always tried to take it day by day, but I was a lot worse at doing that, sort of early on. And also just that consistency, always will out trump any sort of really hard set that you can do or anything like that. The more important thing is really just continuing on in those three sports and trying to improve day by day, as opposed to, trying to do the most ridiculous track workout or something because you think that'll make you way faster, because at the end of the day that's gonna give you a risk of injury a lot more than it's gonna give you a benefit of being faster on race day.
That is incredible, Scott. Thank you so much for your time here on the Kona Edge. Best of luck for Kona 2016. Safe travels, and we look forward to getting you on to talk a little bit about the individual disciplines and what you do and what you've done to get better.
Great. Thank you so much for having me, Brad.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Kona Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for the Kona Edge.
Don't forget to head over to the konaedge.com/win to stand in line to have me pay for your next Ironman. If you'd like to access the commercial-free podcast feed of the Kona Edge, simply head over to the konaedge.com/support.